91.3 WLRN presents Topical Currents. Hardly anyone would admit to being a prejudiced person, but of course, everyone is. Good afternoon, Joseph Cooper. Bonnie Berman is on a brief leave. Expert Gail Price Wise says our biases can be managed with thought and training. She also says there's no such thing as a first impression. A gut feeling is based on something we've seen or experienced in the past. Price Wise has written a book about an infamous case of cultural misunderstanding. It took place in a South Florida hospital ER and probably helped cause a young man to become a lifelong paraplegic. Her book is An Intoxicating Error, Mistranslation, Medical Malpractice, and Prejudice. That's next. First, NPR and regional news. And it is today's Topical Currents. Joseph Cooper with you on this Tuesday afternoon. Bonnie Berman will be back next week. She's at a symposium at Yale University. So this hour we consider not only the moral aspects of the many sorts of prejudice, but the danger that unconscious biases can create, particularly in serious medical situations. With us now is the founder and director of the Florida Center for Cultural Competence. She's Gail Price Wise. And she's the author of the book, An Intoxicating Error, Mistranslation, Medical Malpractice, and Prejudice. That book chronicles a profound medical case, which turned into a perfect storm disaster some 35 years ago in Miami-Dade County. Welcome to you, Gail Price Wise. Good to see you.
Thank you so much for having me on the show.
So how was perception and misunderstanding the root behind the case of teenager Willie Hernandez and his tragedy in 1980? 35 years, it seems, couldn't have been that long ago.
Yes.
Because I remember the case.
Uh-huh. Yes, well, in 1980, Willie Ramirez was brought to a hospital in South Miami. It was called Coral Reef General Hospital at the time. He was unconscious, and he was brought to the hospital by ambulance. And his Spanish-speaking family tried to say to the doctors that he was intoxicado. And they may have even used the word intoxicated, but they did not mean intoxicated the way that we mean it.
Alcohol and drugs.
Exactly. They were trying to say something entirely different. What had happened is that day, Willie had eaten a hamburger at a fast food restaurant. And it was one of the first fast food restaurants in Miami at that time. And later that afternoon, he fell down unconscious. And his family, who were not familiar with fast food restaurants, thought to themselves, see, that's what happens when you eat at a fast food restaurant. You fall down unconscious. And when they got him to the hospital, what they were trying to say to the doctors was that Willie was food poisoned. And in fact, in Cuban Spanish, at least in 1980, intoxicado did not mean intoxicated the way that we would use it for drug or alcohol addiction. What they were trying to say was that he had ingested something that was toxic to his system, that he was food poisoned, and that's why he had fallen down unconscious. Now, the real problem was that he had a brain hemorrhage. And the brain hemorrhage, of course, had nothing to do with having eaten a bad hamburger, and it had nothing to do with a drug overdose.
And could have even been genetic, I believe I read in your book.
Yes, well, what likely happened was that he was born with blood vessels in his brain that were destined to leak one day. And so nobody knows why in January of 1980 these blood vessels started to leak, but they did. And Willie had a brain hemorrhage that was quite severe, and he fell down unconscious, and people did not understand what had happened. So the family then says to the doctor, he's intoxicado, meaning that he's food poisoned. The doctor is confused and thinks to himself, oh, this is a Hispanic male in 1980, during the time of Miami Vice, when there was a lot of drug abuse in the area. And what made sense to him was that Willie had taken a drug overdose. To compound the confusion, Willie's girlfriend, a 15-year-old teenager, said to the doctor, when they asked her, they said, "Are you Willie's girlfriend?" And she was a normal 15-year-old teenager. And she said, "Well, we used to be boyfriend and girlfriend, but we had a fight and we're not boyfriend and girlfriend anymore." Which was completely, had nothing to do with the story, had nothing to do with why Willie was unconscious. But the doctor put together a story that had nothing to do with the truth.
A big assumption. That's why he took the drugs or alcohol, because he was angry after a fight.
Exactly. He thought that Willie had taken an intentional drug overdose because he was upset about the argument with his girlfriend. And he wrote on the admitting sheet, "Probable intentional drug overdose." And because of that, Willie was treated for a drug overdose for almost 2 days. They pumped his stomach. They intubated him, or they put him on a ventilator because he was having trouble breathing. And they didn't look for any other problem. But he didn't wake up from the drug overdose. And then finally, after almost 2 days, they started to realize that something else was wrong, and they sent him over to Baptist Hospital, which was the only hospital in the Miami area in 1980 that had a CAT scanner. They did the CAT scan, and they found a gigantic blood clot in Willie's head that had been bleeding for almost 2 days. They called in the neurosurgeon, who of course did surgery right away, but it was too late, and Willie was left quadriplegic.
We're speaking with Gail Price Wise, and we're talking about her book, Intoxicating Error, Mistranslation, Medical Malpractice, and Prejudice. Now, as you illustrate in the book, Gail, some of this bias, I don't necessarily need to mean to use the word prejudice, but bias, or almost an institutional bias, in the sense that non-Hispanics tend to lump Hispanics into one pot. And yet there are such vast differences. If you're from Argentina and you speak Portuguese, and then Bolivia, and then Caribbean nations, mm-hmm. and that the one of the doctors there was a very educated, obviously, Bolivian man. And to be frank, sometimes they will look down on working class Hispanics of other countries.
Yes. Well, that's a very, very important part of the story. Because you're right. Hispanics are a very diverse group of people. People from Latin America are descendants of Europeans. They're the descendants of Africans, of Asians, and of Native Americans, just as are everyone in the United States. So in Cuba, many people are mixed European and African descent. One of the doctors, after Willie was admitted to the hospital, the attending physician was, as you say, a very well-educated, upper-class Bolivian doctor.
And you used pseudonyms in the book.
Yes, I did use pseudonyms, because the truth is that everyone involved in this story has carried a lot of sorrow and suffering and guilt around it. They've already suffered enormously, and it's not necessary for me to make that any worse.
Understand.
But in this case, the Bolivian doctor felt somewhat different, very different culturally from this lower income or middle income Cuban family. And on the other hand, the Cuban family were very confused about the Bolivian doctor. The reason that they were confused is because in Bolivia, many people have native blood. Many people are of some native descent, like an American Indian. So the doctor, the attending doctor, was of mixed European, or in this case, Spanish and Indian blood. And so his facial features show that. They carry his heritage, his history. And the Cuban family had never seen a doctor of native descent. They thought he was from the housekeeping staff. So they treated him somewhat disrespectfully, and he treated them somewhat disrespectfully.
And it could even have been in the body language.
Even in the body language, or in this case, not only the body language, but they spent very little time together. So part of the reason that that Willie was not treated for the right ailment was that they didn't get a complete medical history. So Willie had been having headaches for several weeks prior to falling down unconscious. If the Spanish-speaking doctor had spent time talking to this Cuban family and asking them questions, the Cuban family may have said, well, Willie's been having headaches, and then he just suddenly fell down unconscious. So clearly points to having a brain hemorrhage that they would have caught the diagnosis much earlier. But because the doctor didn't like the family and the family didn't like the doctor, they spent very little time together, and they never got to explore crucial elements of the medical history.
This is a little bit off topic, but also we're going to go to this topic somewhat, but similar to with the rash of police shootings that our country has experienced, of just assuming things because of your biases and your background.
Yes.
And making tragic decisions.
Well, that's exactly right. And for a lot of the work that I do is in something that I call managing your prejudices. Now, sometimes people call it managing your biases, and so I will use that word when I'm trying to be a little bit more gentle with people. But I want people to recognize in themselves that every human being has prejudices. It's every human being has prejudices. Sometimes it's related to the color of someone's skin, or it might be whether they have an accent, or their socioeconomic class, whether they're somebody that has a lot of money or is very low income, or whether somebody's educated, or whether somebody is overweight or sitting in a wheelchair, or whether they have tattoos, or a whole range of things in which people will size one another up within moments. They'll look at somebody else and say,
including
something as silly as a hoodie. It will cause a police officer or someone else to look at a young man and say to themselves, that person's a derelict, or that person's a criminal, or that person is dangerous, just by something as silly as wearing a hoodie.
Is the reason that some form of bias or prejudice will be in all of us because it's an evolutionary trait? In our hunter-gathering days, someone who was different was a potential enemy, or if they looked that they might be ill or different, could introduce disease to your clan or something.
Well, I think that that's a very good point. I think that that's true. I think it is evolutionary, and I see it everywhere. I've done a lot of traveling in the world, and I've actually spent a lot of time with people from all over the world. And the issue about fearing people who are different from you or disliking people that are different from you is universal. It's in all of us. And sometimes in my classes, I try to get people to recognize it in themselves, because people don't want to be prejudiced. Nobody likes to admit it to themselves. And what I'm trying to teach people is that you have to admit it to yourself. You have to recognize it in yourself in order to manage it, in order to recognize that tendency so that you can treat others fairly and justly, and evaluate each person as an individual rather than part of the group that you hold a stereotype about.
We're speaking with Gail Price Wise. She's a former director of the Harvard School of Public Health. Also, she's the founder and director of the Florida Center for Cultural Competence. We're going to take a short break on Topical Currents. Back with more. And we're back. It is today's Topical Currents, Joseph Cooper, and we're speaking with Gail Price Wise. She's the founder and director of the Florida Center for Cultural Competence. And also, she's the author of a new book called An Intoxicating Error, Mistranslation, Medical Malpractice, and Prejudice. Gail, tell us a little bit about the pre-incident Willie Ramirez. He was a baseball player and a ladies' man. In fact, the day of the incident, he was kind of in some dubious territory.
Well, that's right. Willie's actually good looking. I mean, he's still good looking. But as an 18-year-old, he was extremely handsome and very concerned about his hair.
I'm sorry, but telling this story, I don't think we've quite related that Willie today has been a paraplegic since the incident.
Yes, he has been. He is now probably about 53 years mm-hmm. old. He's been a quadriplegic for all these years since he was 18 years
okay,
old.
So proceed.
And. But as a young teenager, very good looking kid, very athletic, all star baseball team, you know, really good at getting young women to fall in love with him, and in fact, on the day that he had this incident, he was actually out with a young woman, a young girl who was actually not his girlfriend. But he was out actually sitting in the car kissing this girl who was not his girlfriend. And all of a sudden, he said that he felt like somebody stuck a needle in his head, that he had a tremendous, terrible, terrible pain, which I understand is also consistent with having a brain hemorrhage or an aneurysm. And he quickly got to the home of his girlfriend as quickly as he could, where he collapsed on their front lawn and was later taken by ambulance to the hospital.
Now, his aunt, because she seemed to speak the best English, became the spokesperson for the family, and she seemed to the doctors that she was loud and brassy, and
yes,
they were repelled by her.
Yes, and I think this is sort of another example of how you might look at somebody and make assumptions about who they are as a person. This woman, in fact, she was his girlfriend's mother, was, in my mind, a very courageous person, although kind of colorful, kind of speaks a lot and speaks loud, and in this case, very overconfident in her ability to speak English. She had a very difficult time in Castro's Cuba, was somebody that would speak her mind, and it got her in trouble in Cuba because she wasn't deferential to the Cuban officials. She was a teacher, she was educated, and she wasn't afraid to speak up, but it got her in terrible, terrible trouble where she was actually forcibly separated from her husband because the officials didn't like her behavior. When she came to the United States, she was a model immigrant, the kind of person that got off the plane and kissed the ground and said, "I'm an American now," and worked very hard, and she struggled to learn English. She wanted to be an American. She's the kind of person that people say immigrants should be. Really wanted to integrate herself, and in this case, she was overconfident in her ability to speak English. If she had gotten to the emergency room and didn't speak very much English, the situation in some ways may have gone better, but she was overconfident in her ability to speak English and tried to be the interpreter for the family. And in this case, she didn't understand the problem with the word intoxicado and intoxicated. She didn't understand that they were what's called false cognates, which are words that sound similar, but in fact, they mean something different. At the time, in 1980, the hospitals did not have any requirements or regulations around getting qualified interpreters, which is a shame, which is, in fact, a tragic shame, because had they called in a qualified interpreter, the qualified interpreter would have explained to the doctor that the family did not mean a drug overdose, that they were talking about the food poisoning. They would have gotten the whole history out, and perhaps Willie would have had surgery earlier, and he would not be quadriplegic today.
Now, has that translation system been improved in the 35 years since? And also, I suppose, in South Florida, of course, would have to include Haitian Creole.
Well, and yes, I'll say that it has been improved nationally because of eras, medical eras like Willie's. There is more of a push and more of a policy to require hospitals and doctors to hire qualified interpreters or to use, at least to use telephonic interpreting services where you can call up and speak to an interpreter. But the truth of the matter is that they don't do it all the time because it's more expensive and because they get, I want to say, not just lazy, but when they have somebody like Anna, who was the person in Willie's case who made the interpreter error, it looks like she spoke English well enough. They figured, why should I bother? And what I mean to say is what happens today, even today, sometimes doctors or hospitals will think to themselves, why should I bother having to pay for an interpreter on the phone or pay to have an interpreter come when it looks like this family member speaks English adequately and can serve as a competent interpreter? And they don't realize that the danger of having even a single word misinterpreted and how that can lead to a disaster.
Now, of course, it could definitely be seen as an asset in an emergency room that the professionals, be they doctors, nurses, admitting clerks or something, they have experience and rely on that experience and make quick decisions, almost a shorthand to get the correct treatment as fast as possible.
Well, and that may be the case, but I think, and as Willie's example demonstrates so well, it is not possible to really be sure of having a correct diagnosis or a treatment plan unless you have adequate communication with the patient or the family, unless you can get a medical history, unless you can understand what has really happened here. And for that reason, it's essential for hospitals and doctors to always use qualified interpreters and to never rely on family members or friends, even when they appear to be speaking English adequately.
Our telephone number, if you'd like to join in the discussion, we'll take some calls in our next segment. Our telephone number, 1-800-743-9576. Also email, that's radio@wlrn.org. 35 years ago, of course, there weren't any. Every hospital didn't have CT scanners at that time, and Coral Reef was one of those.
That's correct. Coral Reef Hospital was
How
one.
How did that figure in?
Well, and that was an important issue for sure, that if Willie had been brought to a hospital like Baptist at the time, perhaps he would have had a CT scan.
Is that where he had his surgery?
He did have the surgery at Baptist Hospital, that's right. So if he had been brought to a hospital that had had a CT scanner, then perhaps the surgery would have been done sooner. In fact, it surely would have been done sooner. So that did make a difference. But I think that in this particular case, it's just that it was this whole perfect storm of the fact that he was Hispanic, that the fact that people sort of had an association between Hispanics and drug overdose, and the fact that the Bolivian doctor and the Cuban family didn't get along with one another, that all of these things led to the tragedy.
Now, how did some of the doctors in this case were rather indignant that the case became settled, and they figured that they had acted in good faith, and there shouldn't have been a lawsuit, but because it was settled, they weren't able to have witnesses take a stand and vilify let them off at least to some degree.
Well, I think to some extent everybody wants to clear their honor. That when you're charged with malpractice, it's not only the money or even the fear of losing your license. It's an insult. It's an insult.
Or that you're a hack.
Or you're a hack. That's right. It's an insult. And I have great compassion for the doctors that were involved. They are very sorrowful that this thing happened. Very sorrowful. And so to some extent, this is also a problem of the policy of the hospital, that it's really important for hospital administrators and policymakers to ensure that families and patients get adequate interpreters. That would have made the difference. But, you know, admittedly, there were some other problems that happened in the hospital that had nothing to do with the interpreting. For example, when Willie was admitted to the emergency room, they did what's called a tox screen. You know, they took his blood and they took his urine and they were looking for some kind of drug that would have explained the drug overdose. And the tox screen got lost. It actually kind of got lost in the system. It didn't get back to the medical record for a couple of days. And so, and people kind of forgot about it.
And you would assume it was clean.
That's right.
Of course, you can't assume.
Well, can I just tell you, interestingly, during the depositions, they were asked to bring the tox screen, and they were told, it was reported that the tox screen was completely lost. I went to Baptist Hospital and got the record, the year's worth of medical records, and I found the tox screen. And the tox screen said caffeine and nicotine. So what that was about is that that day Willie had gone out with some friends to a bar. He did not drink. He did not use drugs. But he did have an iced tea, and that was the nicotine in his blood. And that was the caffeine in his blood. And it was a smoke-filled room, although he did not smoke. That was the passive smoking that was shown in his blood. So the talk screen actually, for whatever reason, it didn't end up being brought to the attention of the decision makers at the time, and it wasn't completely lost. But during the lawsuit, they were embarrassed, and they said they couldn't produce it, but I found it without too much difficulty.
Well, do you think that perhaps those attorneys wanted that to be lost?
Well, I can't say, because I wasn't there. I will just tell you that it was suspicious that they couldn't find it, and I found it very easily.
And led them to settle earlier.
That's probably true.
We're speaking with Gail Price Wise. We're talking about her book, Intoxicating Error, Mistranslation, Medical Malpractice, and Prejudice. Time for a short break. We'll be back with more. Minutes past 1 o'clock. It's Topical Currents, Joseph Cooper. We resume our conversation with Gail Price Wise about her book, Intoxicating Error, Mistranslation, Medical Malpractice, and Prejudice. We're talking about prejudice and unconscious bias in general as well. If you'd like to join in with a telephone comment, you're certainly welcome. 1-800-743-9576. 1-800-743-WLRN. Also email, that's radio@WLRN.org. radio@WLRN.org. Tell me more, Gail, about the Florida Center for Cultural Competence and what it does. And I assume there's online courses, workshops, symposiums, mm-hmm. and the like.
Yeah, so the Florida Center for Cultural Competence provides training for all kinds of professionals and all kinds of people working with others who are different from them culturally. Some of the workshops are online, and actually we do a lot of face-to-face training as well. And essentially what the content of the training, the content is to, one, as I said earlier, get people to understand and to manage their biases. And then second, to learn how to communicate more effectively with people who are different from you culturally, especially when you have a duty to treat them fairly. So it might be if you're a teacher and you're trying to understand how to work more effectively with children and families from different cultural backgrounds, or you're working in a company, in a corporation, and you're trying to create a more effective team and have people in a team in a corporation work together more effectively, or as we've been talking about, is how to work more effectively with patients who are different from you. And then there's the whole piece on learning more specifically about traditions and holidays and cultural beliefs and practices, things that are just simply handy to know when you're working with someone who's different from you culturally.
Tell me, are there some people who really don't want to lose their prejudices?
Well, I think that that's true. I think that there are some people that are racist, or they're sexist, or they're classist, or they're something, and they actually get some benefit from being in a powerful position, or somehow it makes them feel better.
Outright racist, neo-Nazis.
Well, and I wish that weren't true, but of course it is, that there are some people that actually gain a sense of strength or power from feeling themselves to be superior to others. But honestly, you know, I tend to be an optimist, and I tend to like to think I tend to see the best in human beings. Most of us don't want to be prejudiced. Most of us wish that we weren't. And so in my training programs, I help people look at that sort of thing. I help them acknowledge it. I help them think about where it came from. And I help them manage the prejudices so that they can still treat other people fairly. So that, for example, if they're an employer and somebody comes into their place of work and they're looking for employment, I teach them how to see somebody that walks into your office and see to them and say to yourself, "Oh, I don't like people that look like that or dress like that or have that color skin or speak with an accent or have tattoos or purple hair or whatever it is." I teach them to actually recognize their feelings of discomfort with other groups of people, and then to realize that the individual sitting in front of them deserves to be treated as a unique person rather than part of a stereotype.
I suppose you deal with, in your classes, a lot of, to address institutional type biases where there's nothing overt, but, well, shucks, we've never had, say, a dispatcher for our air conditioning company who was a woman.
Right. Well, change is hard for people. People kind of like to do things the way that they've always been doing it. And in particular, people are comfortable with others who are like them, or they're comfortable with people that they're used to spending time with. And so it does require a certain amount of commitment to opening your mind and thinking to yourself, I'm going to learn about people who are very different from me. And you know, the issue of stereotypes is really fun. I actually love to do exercises with stereotypes because I get people to kind of recognize stereotypes.
Give us an example.
Oh, let's think. What I like to do is I like to get people in my classes to talk about stereotypes related to themselves and ways in which the stereotype may be true of them or not true. So, for example, I'm of an Eastern European Jewish descent. And one stereotype of Jews is that we're supposed to be good accountants. And I personally am a terrible accountant. So that stereotype doesn't fit me at all. Or I've had people in my classes stand up and say, I'm Asian and I'm not good at math.
And I can't drive.
Right. Where sometimes stereotypes are, sometimes individuals are consistent with the stereotype. So, for example, there are certainly Jews that are very good accountants, and there are certainly Asians that are very good at math. But what's true is that individuals may or may not match the stereotype for their group. And let's see, another one. I had a young woman the other day in a medical school class stand up, and she was, what can I say, she was this beautiful blonde-haired woman that looked like she had just stepped out of a magazine. And, you know, you think, oh, that woman's got everything going for her, right? So she stood up and she said, you know, I'm a medical student, and I love science. And people look at me and they think I'm a dumb blonde. And it really made me laugh because, you know, this issue about stereotypes, we're all kind of afflicted with them. And sometimes they're good stereotypes and sometimes they're bad stereotypes. But it's really important to realize that stereotypes may be true of some individuals within a group and not true of other individuals in a group. So when we start looking at the negative stereotypes, things like, oh, a certain group might be associated with alcohol abuse, or a group of professionals might be associated with unfair billing practices. Oh, they always overcharge their clients. A group might be associated with unethical investment practices.
Perpetually late.
Exactly. There are all kinds of stereotypes. And what I say to people about stereotypes is they are true of certain individuals within the group and completely untrue of other individuals in the group. So what I want you to do is I want you to recognize the stereotypes and recognize that the individual sitting in front of you may or may not be consistent with the stereotype. Maybe the beautiful blonde woman standing in front of me is actually terrific at math and physics.
Well, we can be amused by this conversation, but then again, if we're in a position of perhaps deadly authority, those prejudices and biases have a lot deeper meaning. How can those in authority have those prejudices mitigated more?
Yeah. Well, this is something I feel very strongly about because for me, this is all about social justice. It's about creating a world that's fair for everyone and a world that's safe for everyone. And so I'm, you know, all I can say is that people that are in authority or people that are in positions of power, forgive me for making the plug, but they should take my class, or they should make some effort to recognize their own prejudices and to admit them to themselves. That, you know, it's sort of like a 12-step program. You need to start off by saying, "Hi, I'm Gail Price Wise, and I have prejudices. I'm a human being, and I have prejudices." It's just part of the human existence.
Our telephone number, if you have a comment, that's easy enough, 1-800-743-9576, or email radio@wlrn.org. First caller, we have Gladys in Miami. Hi there.
Hi. I'm calling just to say that I'm absolutely amazed by the wonderful interview. I would like to know the name of the course, because I have been following. I arrived late to the conversation, and I don't know the name of the course that the professor is referring to.
Yes, well, I can say if you're interested in learning more about the work that I do, you should go to my website. You can either Google Florida Center for Cultural Competence, or the URL is culturalcompetence.center. It's culturalcompetence.center.
Okay, thank you so much. I just want to share with you that I teach ethics, and I totally agree with what you're saying. And there's this saying that a French philosopher has this quote that words are gestures and their meaning is a world, and we need to understand the meaning and the world around these gestures, referring to the disconnect between intoxication in Spanish and intoxication in English on one side. And the other comment that I wanted to add is that I totally agree with you that the first step is to recognize that everybody is full of prejudices. But unfortunately, before acknowledging that we have these prejudices, it's just better to belittle the otherness when we separate self from other in these categories and in this generalization. How do you deal with your students to allow them to have emotional and intellectual honesty and say, "I have prejudices"? Do you have any techniques in particular that you want to share?
Well, I think for one, I try to model it. You know, in my classes, I try to talk about my own prejudices and sort of get people comfortable acknowledging and talking about theirs. So, you know, a prejudice that I have is that I might be uncomfortable with somebody that has like purple hair and lots of tattoos or lots of body piercings. And I apologize to anybody online that fits that description. I am not saying anything about you. I'm saying something about me. I might have some discomfort around that, and it may have nothing to do with people that actually are that way. It's just a thought or a feeling that pops into my mind unconsciously, and my job as a reasonable human being and as a moral human being is to recognize my prejudices and to say, you know what, that's me. It's me generating that uncomfortable feeling. It's not the individual in front of me. So you can imagine that this is sometimes a painful thing for people to do, to recognize their own prejudices, but I'm asking them to recognize, well, they have a prejudice. It has more to do with who they are as a person, or the kind of education that they had, or the kind of what kind of movies they've seen, or what they've seen on television, and it doesn't have to do with the person who is the object of the prejudice.
Your book made me think a little bit, is I found that I even have a prejudice with a certain name, a first name, because I was mistreated or I didn't like the behavior a couple of times of a person who had that name. When I see that name, I'm always kind of, oh no, not another one of those.
Yes, I think that's a great example. It's actually kind of a funny example, but it is sort of part of human nature that if you've had an experience with somebody, that perhaps because they have a name or because they're tall or they're short or they have you know, blonde hair or whatever, and then you kind of have forevermore have a gut feeling about that kind of person. So again, this is all about people recognizing their prejudices, admitting it to themselves, and realizing that it's them. When I have a gut feeling about somebody else and I feel, oh, I'm not sure that I like that kind of person, it's me creating that yuck feeling. It's not them.
I found it interesting that the year of this medical tragedy, 1980, was also the year that Dade County voters approved an English-only ordinance, which then 13 years later was rescinded by the county commission, but the public voted for it.
Yeah. So this is what I tell people about others that don't, they're speaking around you in another language. They're not talking about you. They're not talking about you. And I think one of the reasons that people really like English only, or where some people are uncomfortable with others that are speaking another language in front of them, is they're somehow fearful that they're the object of the conversation or they're the subject of the conversation. And it's actually very difficult to learn another language.
Yes, it is.
It takes years. And when people come to the United States from another country and they're with others that speak their native language, it's just natural to have a conversation in your native language and not to try to have a conversation in English, which is your second language, and you're groping for words and it's awkward. So those of us that are with others that are speaking another language, we should just be compassionate. We should be compassionate and understand these poor people. They just want to get together and speak in their own native language.
Of course, it's broadening to learn another
language. Of course, it's broadening to learn another language.
Let's move along. Next caller is Paula. She's in Dania. Hi there.
Hi. I love the show. I hate the subject, but I'm happy people are talking about it. I think prejudice has really ruined this country in many ways. Congressmen who would insist that they're not racist, not prejudiced. They are. They can't help it, what you said before, and it's really hurting this country. It's been years ago the word uppity was actually used, and it kills me. And I think prejudice is something that's very hard to get over, like growing up Catholic. You know, it's very hard to undo prejudice. But I've seen it in my life, and it's horrible.
Well, it is horrible. Prejudice leads people to treat one another very badly. It treats people to be violent towards one another. It treats people to deny one another jobs, to keep people from living in places where they want to live.
From getting Obamacare.
from getting health care, that's exactly right. And all sorts of really bad things. Prejudice, is, as just as you said, is a terrible thing, and unfortunately it's something that is embedded in human beings. And so I think it's important for people to become educated about the topic, learn about prejudice, learn about the fact that it's part of the human condition, and learn how to manage their prejudices so that they can treat others fairly and justly.
I agree.
Okay, thanks for your call.
Thank you.
And we move along. This is Lauren in Hollywood. Lauren, you're up. Hi.
Yes, and good afternoon. Thank you. I think I'm going to another place, and I'm really curious what the professor has to say about this. I'm in my 60s. My sister, at the time of adopting two children, were in her, her 40s with her husband. They grew up. They were 60s kids. Many, many people in Manhattan have au pairs. Many people have au pairs from Jamaica that are uneducated women. We are all educated in our family. My mother was an educated woman. We knew at first sight that this was the wrong person taking care of my sister's children. But I'm not attempting to say that. This is not what this is about. I'm attempting to say that even as a 60s child, my sister went to Mississippi in the 60s and did a lot of time in SNCC with her ex-husband. I know I have letters from her. I'm saying that she could not see the, how the woman that she had hired could harm her children because she was an abused woman herself. That, in other words, her reliance on the fact that this woman was black just what she was seeing. She wasn't seeing the whole picture. And I say that that's also a kind of prejudice. It's like an educated prejudice. It comes with liberalism. And I think it's wrong. You have to see a person as a human.
So
this
can
woman was not, yes.
Can I, let me just interrupt you for a second. It's not possible to know something about someone else's character by looking at them. It's just not.
I don't think that that's, I think that that is true. But I think that what happened was is that the woman was extremely aggressive with the children.
Well, but that's
unfolded.
Yeah, all I can say is that's one individual that has nothing to do with her cultural background or her racial background. It's one individual. It sounds like it was an unfortunate situation.
Okay. Thanks for your call. We'll move along to John in Palm Beach. Hi there.
Yeah, what's up?
You.
I'll try my best. I'm not very good at expressing myself, but I'll try very, very good. Some people carry themselves in a bad way. You got to, if you're in respect, you got to dress right. If you're an employer and someone comes to your job and every word out of their mouth is F, and they got sagging pants, would you hire a person like that? I love this effing job. That's why I applied for this effing job. And they got sagging pants. Would you want to hire someone like that? Can you call that prejudice?
Well, this is what I can say about it. Probably if you're suggesting that somebody is using curse words in a job interview, perhaps that just sort of describes someone that you don't want to hire. So I would agree with you in that regard.
That's how they speak. Some people, every word out of their mouth is F.
Yeah. And that's probably not appropriate.
Yeah, but I wouldn't call myself prejudiced. My wife is white. I don't care what color you are. You could be from Mars or Mary. I don't care. I wouldn't say I'm prejudiced, but you got to carry yourself appropriately, dress appropriately if you want respect. I wouldn't think that's prejudice if the employer don't want to hire someone like that.
Mm-hmm. So again, the only thing that I will say about what you're saying is that it's not possible to judge somebody's character in a minute. That regardless of what they're wearing or how they're speaking, if you're really trying to judge somebody's character, it takes a little bit longer of getting to know somebody and to determine what kind of human being they are. That's all.
Tell us more about the Florida Center for Cultural Competence. Some of our listeners may have just tuned in.
Sure. So again, this is a company that provides training and consulting in working more effectively with people from different cultural backgrounds. Sometimes it's within the context of health and medicine. We also do work with corporations, with schools, with other nonprofits. And it's the idea that we as human beings have a responsibility it's a moral responsibility to treat others fairly, to treat others fairly with regards to their health care, their education, with who we hire, with how we promote people within a corporation, all kinds of things. And so I am teaching people how to get along with one another, regardless of the cultural differences between them.
And how do people contact you for that?
Sure. You can find me on the web at Florida Center for Cultural Competence. It's the URL is culturalcompetence.center.
And we'll take one more call. I do remind our callers that we are very short on time. Ian in Lake Worth. Hi there.
Hello.
Go ahead, Ian.
My question is more about cultural differences rather than prejudice. For instance, when the British were in India, seti was, wife burning was a common practice. And the British thought it was abhorrent. You could say that's culturally insensitive, but it was a real cultural clash between Western ideas of individuals and liberalism and a cultural setting which said that your wife is only worth whatever you're worth. So when you die, she should die with you. Or Sharia law today in the fundamentalist Muslim areas.
Ian, but I'm short on that. What about very wide differences in cultures?
First, I will say that's kind of an interesting philosophical question. Philosophers actually look at that question. Is it appropriate to have a world in which we assume that everyone's culture and traditions are equally okay? And I would say that most philosophers will say that the answer to that question is yes, but. Mm. But. that it's hard to imagine that any traditions that involve injuring people, denying people rights, harming others is something that's culturally tolerable or okay.
Well, I certainly want to thank you, Gail Price Wise. She's the founder and director of the Florida Center for Cultural Competence. Also, her book is Intoxicating Error, Mistranslation, Medical Malpractice, and Prejudice. Very nice meeting you. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
And thanks for listening. We apologize to those callers we couldn't get on the air. Our program was produced by Richard Ive, technical direction from online producer Paul Leary. We have free audio archives and downloads available at our website. That's WLRN.org. And tomorrow's Topical Currents, we learn more about the burgeoning feral animal activity in our series. Of course, the Miami area probably leads the league with gators, iguanas, boas, chickens, and also the new influx of African snails. Joseph Cooper for Bonnie Berman. Stay tuned for Here and Now next from NPR News.